I guess nobody warned anybody that I was coming up here, so you couldn't escape like I was trying to do during class with the GPS. Apologize for that interruption there, Bob, because I know how frustrating that can be, but I was trying to get the address locked in and to the congregation here and just hit the wrong button. But I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity to speak with you and the elders for allowing me to bring a few thoughts, and Ben also for allowing me to take over this morning. And most importantly, thank the Lord for all that He's provided for us and this wonderful building, the members here, and just health and friendships, all that we have on this earth. And we're going to be talking about what are we doing? What are we doing here on earth? What is our purpose? And how are we fulfilling that purpose with our limited scope of influence and what we see sometimes is our small role within our community and in our lives. We'll start with recognizing that we do have a purpose. We do have something that we are working toward, and then we'll talk about actively engaging with that purpose and moving forward with a sense of purpose. Each year in the spring, the monarch butterfly begins with what I can only describe as a cliche, in that it starts an epic journey from the mountains of central Mexico up through the United States and often into Canada and the northern United States. The monarch as a species, cannot survive harsh winters. And so, unlike many insects, they can't burrow or rely on protective shells or whatever the case may be to last through a cold, harsh winter by laying eggs or hoping that the pupas can survive. So they must go to a place where, obviously, the weather is warmer and the humidity is high enough that it can sustain their life. And they reside in large trees that are there in Mexico to at least survive what sometimes could be brief cold spells just by the residual heat from those trees. And as the weather begins to improve from the winter, they begin to fly back north and be here where we see them in our daily lives. And I realized that those monarchs did migrate in some form, but I didn't realize the scale and just how incredible this journey can be. This migration, to me, is incredible because it's not just completed by a single butterfly. But whenever a butterfly leaves Mexico, it nests and mates in Texas or northern Mexico. And it dies and then brings another generation forward, and that generation flies a little bit further north and settles in southern United States and begins to come up into our area, and then they mate and die within about a month. And then another generation begins to move into the northern United States and proliferate throughout all of the area that's close to us, as well as the northern United States. And they live about a month, and then they die. And then another generation is born. And that generation in the northern United States and Canada is one of the most remarkable things that I've seen in nature. And that generation will live for about 9 months. And it will take this epic journey back down from Canada to the mountains of central Mexico. And single-handedly, if you will, migrate to protect the species. And this almost blew my mind. This is obviously from a little PBS special that I was watching with my daughter. She likes butterflies, so I thought it'd be interesting. But this journey that they have to take as a single generation is about 3,000 miles in many cases. And, of course, there's other butterflies from throughout the area that they meet up with, and they all seem to know at the same time to fly down through Texas in the same spot to go down to central Mexico. I don't know. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail and speculations here. I'm sure we've all been on the same page with this, but to think that that's an accident is almost mind-boggling to me. But how did that generation undertake such a huge journey, being such a tiny little butterfly, and be able to survive just by following the wind currents and whatever God had given them for direction, and all fall through to protect this species? And again, that's just incredible to me. But what I'm going to talk about this morning is, think of this in terms of glory and honor. And also think of this as travails and difficulties. You may think that the glory and honor goes to that one generation that is able to survive for 9 months or however long that they need to fly down and undertake this journey, because they get to go and perpetuate the species. Perhaps they are more honorable than the butterflies that came before. They got to live longer. They got to undertake a greater journey and experience more. They traveled farther. They accomplished so much more than what other generations had done before. But also, they had a harder case. They had to undertake this journey. They were tasked, in order to survive for this entire generation, with the daunting journey that laid before them in flying 3,000 miles to southern Mexico. There is an authority, obviously, at work that is higher than ourselves in this situation. They didn't ask to undertake that journey. And the generations before them didn't ask to be the ones that just perpetuated and only lived a month. But another authority set this in place. And we all are also under that same authority. The survival and health of the species, as it were, is not dependent on what we believe is right, what we think is right, what is seemingly important, or the task and the quality of that task, and the how virtuous that task may be in our minds, but it's more important what God obviously thinks is important. Sometimes we can feel like we're this tiny little butterfly flying out in this vast world, just getting sucked up into wind currents and taken along for a ride that we never planned on. But there is something greater at work. As Bob was pointing out earlier this morning, we are set apart. We are holy. And sometimes being holy and set apart brings a sense of loneliness along for the ride. But we are not alone, and we are working toward a worthy goal. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, we'll be spending quite a bit of time there talking about being one of many. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, beginning in verse 12, "For as the body is one and has many members, but all of the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, 'Because I am not a hand, I am not of the body,' is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, 'Because I am not an eye, I am not of the body,' is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as He had pleased. But if they were all one member, where would the body be?" If we were all one member, if we all took on one purpose, if we all are equal talents, all the same, how could we be called a body? We wouldn't contribute to things that needed to be done, that were apart from that one role. Whatever we may look like, whatever we may think, we should be, we all need to offer as functional members of the body. We should show honor, therefore, to all members of the body as well. I think part of the issue that we struggle with is that we don't feel like we're recognized. We don't feel like we have a part. And that's where we need to work to better encourage one another. Because everybody, every member of the body, is as important as another member. And we need to do a better job only to make sure that those members all feel like they are part of the body. That's where encouragement comes from. That's what we should do as part of our service, as part of our fellowship with one another, is to encourage and build one another up. Continuing here in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 20, "But now indeed there are many members, yet one body, and the eye cannot say to the hand, 'I have no need of you,' nor again to the head, nor again the head to the feet, 'I have no need of you.' No, much rather, these members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, in these we bestow greater honor, and our unpresentable parts have greater modesty." Think of Joseph as an example here. Joseph being sold into slavery and being able to work and serve the Lord was able to rise through the interpretation that he offered to Pharaoh into great power. And he could have been angry. He could have been bitter about his position. And justifiably so, perhaps, in that he was put into a very difficult situation. But again, he tried to make the best of what situation he was in to work of the Lord. And you think of when his brothers came to visit, to buy grain that was brought about by the fulfillment of these interpretations of the dreams. And they were seeing what they could do just to survive. And Joseph recognizes his brothers. He could have had them executed if he wanted to. He could have done so much to revenge what was done to him. And we wouldn't even had it recorded, probably, in the Bible, if that was the case. But what did he do instead? In Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, it says, "But as for you," this is Joseph speaking, "you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive." So much could have been said about what Joseph decided. But he knew, most importantly, God meant that something else could come about from the position he was in. Having a perspective of love and sacrifice of ourselves is more productive than self-advancement or power. We should not have an attitude of winning and losing on our minds and our priority lists, because what that does is set ourselves as the most important piece of the puzzle. Chris Valentin said, You can sacrifice and not love, but you cannot love and not sacrifice. You can make a lot of sacrifices and not have love in your heart. That hastens back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. But you cannot truly love and never make a sacrifice. It will happen. Here in this case of Joseph, he had sacrificed his entire life, essentially, and what it could have been with his family. Just as you would think of a single butterfly that has to fly 3,000 miles, or a single butterfly that lives a month and lays an egg, all of this worked to a greater goal. Whoever loves his life loses it, and whoever hates his life in this world shall keep it for eternal life. John chapter 12, verse 25. And Pierre Giraud also said, "Someday you will find out there is far more happiness in another's happiness than in your own happiness." And I think that many of us, as we grow older, start to realize that I could struggle and struggle for my own happiness and try to figure out what that means, and then turn around one day and realize happiness was not in my own happiness. Because I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what happiness is. I'm searching. I buy, I build, I do all these things, and then I look at it, and what was it? Was that even what I really was searching for? But to make someone else honored and happy, that was a greater gift in my own life. Continuing in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, again in verse 24, "But our presentable parts have no need, but God composed the body, having given greater honor to that part which lacks, and that there should be no schism in the body, but the members should have the same care for one another." We have to realize that we didn't build it. We didn't create it. It's not our honor. It's not our glory. And we are merely parts of a body that was made by someone else. So our perspective needs to be centered on what the will of God is. What is going to make the Lord happy? I think He's told us in many different places what will make Him happy. Sometimes we don't necessarily want to look at those places because we're a little bit absorbed in what our values are, apart from His. But most importantly, we should see His above ours. He continues on in verse 26, "If one member suffers, then all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it." Think of the pleasure that you could have by the honor that's bestowed upon someone in your family or within the church. It's not necessarily a selfish thing, but we are happy for one another. We are excited when things that are exciting happen. But we also have to realize that we should mourn and comfort one another in difficult times. During the Oklahoma City bombing that was remembered a couple of weeks ago, after its 20th anniversary, out of the 25 children that were in the daycare center near where the bomb was detonated, 6 of those children survived. There was an interview on the radio about one of those survivors, and he and his mother sat down. His name was Chris Nguyen, and his mother was Fong Nguyen. And Chris says, "A lot of times people ask me, 'What do you remember?' But I don't remember anything." His mother says, "On the anniversary, we used to hide the newspaper. We'd turn off the TV. We didn't want you to see or to hear." And Chris says, "And then I found out in kindergarten. Some girl brought a clip for a show and tell. It was the bombing, and I started crying. That's the first time I heard about it. But I knew it was the bombing. Nobody had to say it to me. I already knew." And his mother said, That day left a scar in our life. It's going to stay with you. It's not going to go away." Chris says, "There are stories and there are interviews, there are newspaper reports every year that tell me exactly what happened, and apparently I'm part of it. But you remember the Harry Potter movies? In the story, his parents die and he survives somehow, and he doesn't know why. And he doesn't remember because he was also a baby. And that's what it's like for me. I guess I never really talked to you and Dad about this. There's a lot of pressure to make both of you proud, but also for all the parents who lost their own children. They won't ever get to have that sense of pride when they see their children succeeding. And when I'm thinking about what I'm doing with my life, I have to think about all those children and where in that daycare center that day and how I'm lucky to have survived. I wouldn't want to waste this opportunity that they didn't have." Chris didn't ask or choose to go to that daycare center that day. He didn't ask to be part of those tragic events, but it affected everything about his life from that day forward. Just due to his circumstance, he felt that he was responsible somehow to make the lives of those other children and their families move forward somehow and be a representative or a symbol for them. We have to recognize that we also are representatives. As we go about our lives, we serve a purpose. We have obligations associated with that purpose. We are seen as representatives for Christ. We are seen as representatives of one another. And as a result, we have to accurately reflect what we stand for, what our purpose is. In Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 through 4, it says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." And reflecting it back again in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 27, "Now you are the body of Christ and members individually." You are members. You are the body. You are representatives, and you have a purpose. Let's get into a few specific things about how to be a proper sacrifice in our daily lives for the Lord. In Hebrews chapter 13, verses 12 through 17, "For Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Therefore, by him let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you." So he says here, getting back to this idea of holiness, be separate. Go outside the gate like Christ did. You're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have to face that confrontation within yourself. Because Christ did it for us, it's not going to be normal. It's not going to look the same as the world does. You're going to have to suffer as you separate and go outside the gate. He also encouraged us to keep hope in the reward of heaven. We do have a promise. There is something fulfilled in our purpose at the end of it all. He also encouraged us to remember to praise God and honor him above all. He has created all. He has given us all. We owe him the same. Thank him in prayer for all that you have and all that you will be. And then he also encouraged us to do good and share what we've been given. If you have the ability to teach, then teach. If you have the ability to cook and enough food to spare, then share it with someone. If you see someone requiring help, then lend a hand. If you see a brother struggling or hurting, take a day off work and make sure that they're in a better place than they were 24 hours before, if you can. We have to recognize our obligations and our responsibilities because we are claiming to be part of God's kingdom. And these are those things that have been asked of us as members of that body. It's not an onerous thing. It could be seen as such, I suppose, in some ways. But don't grieve over what may be difficult. Don't grieve over what you're going to miss out on, maybe, if you can get into that perspective. Recognizing that our sense of responsibility and our reward is far greater, we need to take action and do what we know is the right thing. And then he also encourages here to obey those that are in authority over us, because their success in leading the group is our success. They have our best interests at heart. We shouldn't make it difficult for them. You may say, Neil, you're not telling me anything that's really glorious. You're not telling me anything that's really of high honor. In the address that Abraham Lincoln gave in the dedication ceremony of the cemetery that was constructed at Gettysburg in November 19th, 1863, he was not the keynote speaker. He instead was following Edward Everett, who gave a two-hour speech before the president came forward to give a few thoughts. But in a few sentences, Abraham Lincoln delivered what is remembered as one of the most poignant thoughts that's carried through this nation's history. Of course, 47 years ago, you may be familiar with this. Our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men were created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives, and that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, he continues, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggle here have consecrated it, far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, which I find very ironic because this is carried for 150 years beyond just these few words, but it was because he said this about these men. But he says, nor long remember what we say here, but I can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they have fought here, have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great work, great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they have the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government for the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. So the same idea I leave with you this morning, that we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow, or make holy, as we talked about earlier in class. We cannot commit souls to heaven or condemn souls to hell. What we do is carry the message forward, and we make our lives as good an example as possible to make sure that we serve as members of a greater body than we are of ourselves. If you are outside of Christ, you may not have that opportunity to make yourself part of something greater than yourself, because God has instituted a body that is far greater than anything that could be structed of man here on earth. You need to be part of something that is sacred and holy and set apart by God. He is going to lay out judgment upon us all. And he has specifically stated that only those that are a part of his kingdom will be accepted eternally. That's the judgment that you need to deal with within your life. Or if you are apart from the kingdom because of something that you've done, that you have continued guilt over, or for any other reason, we have an invitation at this time to invite you to come forward and to speak of those things and to help you, and we will help you resolve those conflicts within your life and set your purpose clear in service to the Lord. Do so as we stand and sing an invitation song.